need to always remind ourselves that this is a standing committee. So, in being a standing committee, there are always two chairs. We are co-chairing with one other person, myself being the co-chairman. So we're co-chairing. We have requested the quality services to come to us. And we all know that the standing committee on HIV and AIDS is that particular committee that oversees what's happening in the whole country as far as HIV and AIDS is concerned. And we have added TB to that as one of the chief that we need to oversee and see what is going on. Maybe let me say why correctional services. We call correctional services because we understand there seems to be a high prevalence of HIV in the correctional services. I think it's not for us to say why it is like that, but there are certain things that we think are peculiar to that particular area. We are told that people break an enhancement which causes erosion on the private parts, and that the precursor to infection, and that makes it difficult to get HIV and AIDS. And secondly, those people that have got that practice that way of doing things, they are prone to infections because of the bacteria around that area. And that further causes problems, causes erosion, causes infection, and that makes people prone to HIV and AIDS. And obviously, if we are told that there's HIV and AIDS, it's always 70% of people that HIV positive are prone to HIV. Whether that happens when they are immunodeficient, even when they are not immunodeficient, but they are prone to HIV. So, and those are the two problems that as a portfolio committee, we want to see whether the South African government is doing well in making sure that people are well in South Africa. So we thought it was important for us to call the correctional services to see what they're doing, to confirm firstly that there is a problem. Second, to see what are their strategies as far as that. Are they getting enough budget? Are they doing well in trying to combat this problem? So that's why members, we thought that we needed to call them so that they could explain. And fortunately, they are here to tell us what is going on. And we further know that if it's going to be in one place, a big number of people, which we have heard that most of our correctional services areas are overpopulated, then it's busy to infect each other because they're close to each other, especially things like TB. So it becomes a very serious problem. So those are the reasons why we call them. I'm told they're here and I'm told they're ready to present to us. So we will give over to them to present to us after we tell them who we are. I think I must not forget to say, sitting here as a standing committee on HIV and AIDS, we are one group that wishes that Mandela to get better. We're told that she's improving, but she's in a serious condition. So we're wishing, and that actually tells us that probably as South Africans, we need to learn something about geriatrics, making sure that we're able, because now the life expectancy has increased, and it hasn't been increased. It means we're getting a lot of old people, and when we get a lot of old people, they're going to need their own type of care. And I'm sure in that area we don't have a lot of specialists in geriatric medicine, but it teaches us that we need to put in geriatric medicine and home-based care, because our hospitals are going to be full very soon. So that was time to open up the meeting, and I'm sure we introduce ourselves so that the leadership from Parisian Services can know the people that are here, but I know you're going to forget our names very soon. But all we know about you is that it's general and brigadier, so it's easy to address you. And I think I'm leaving Bokwana. I've got my co-chair here, the beautiful one.
Good morning, co-chair. On refuse de parler du soir et de n'avoir plus d'extrémité.
Mais peut-être que vous avez quand même d'extrémité.
I'm talking about being from the NCOP. Okay, I think the problem with it, we can't go on without apologizing to you because we were called to last week, but unfortunately because of the problem of Parliament, we had to cancel the meeting last week. We are very sorry about that. So, but we're happy that you had agreed that you couldn't come last week, you were prepared, but there were other problems that actually affected us. We apologize for that. So we give over to you, General, to tell us what's going on.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Co-Chair, and members, Honourable Members of Parliament and the NCOP. Firstly, Chair, let me also start with an apology just to confirm the apology of our Honourable Minister, who cannot be here to lead us. I think he also received a written apology, as well as that of the National Commissioner, Mr. Tomo Yang. They are having an event in the Northern Cape today, which was pre-planned, and also just to tender their sincere apology, and we hope and believe that it will be accepted by the Honourable Committee. Honourable Chair, just to introduce myself, I am Ben Smallberger. I am not a general, but I am in correctional services. We call it the Chief Deputy Commissioner, and I'm responsible for incarceration and corrections. Chair on my right hand side is the Director of Healthcare Services in the Department of Correctional Services, Ms. Maria Mavena, who will look after you, Chair, if you, as you indicated, if you arrived one day, you know. Chair, on a lighter note, whilst it seems that we are elections, I'm so glad to be a part of this presentation to the Standing Committee, that it's a sitting Standing Committee. So luckily we are standing today. Chair, now we are really glad and we accept the apology for the change in the program. I think for us as government officials, we need always to be ready on one when and wherever the members of Parliament need information. And we were ready last week, but we are also ready this week, Chair. Chair, let me also just say just a few comments before we are going to the presentation, if it's fine. Chair, it is correct, as you have said, that correctional services, we are overpopulated in our centres. In long terms, we have beds for plus minus 120,000 people. But as of yesterday evening, our total inside is 152,000, of which 108,000 are sentenced, and the other 44,000 are awaiting trial attendees. Also, just to say that in terms of those behind bars, roughly 3,500 are females, and the rest are males. So if you look at the population, you'll find that there might be something wrong somewhere because of, you know, the huge number of males that are inside. Maybe we need to congratulate Obama for not being inside. Chair, in terms of our other responsibility, we have 54,000 people on parole as well as on probation in the community. In other words, those people, the most of them come from our centres, and they are outside and serving their sentences as non-custodial in the community. So if you combine the two, you will see that it's roughly 220,000 that are currently our responsibility. Chair, in terms of healthcare services, you know, correctional services is one of those departments that is almost a mini-government because within my area of responsibility, which is one of the core functions, we don't have only healthcare services, we have social work services, we have psychologists as a separate entity also under the department. We do have, you know, educationists, so we almost have everything within one, under one umbrella. I'm just saying that just to see that, you know, it is a vast scope, but we are regarding you know, all the services very important, especially also healthcare services. Therefore, it's also part of the core function that they need to assist and provide support to this hundreds of thousands that we are having behind bars. Chair, also what may be appropriate just to share with the Standing Committee is the fact that, you know, we are admitting on a monthly basis, plus minus been 5,000 people. So meaning that those who are inside this month might be outside next month. And so it's roughly between 23,000 to 24,000 coming out and coming in. So it is a revolving door, and I think that will also stress the importance of healthcare services, because the people are really, you know, coming in and out. Chair, having said that, I'm not going to keep you further with your agreement, Chair. I'm going to ask Ms. Mabena just to take us through the presentation. It's fine with you, and then obviously there will be questions. If it's fine with you, Chair and Co-Chair, we will do it like that. Thank you, Chair.
This is not what I think that you are on there.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. I'm going to take you through a presentation on how DPS manages HIV within the prescript of the National Department of Health. As an introduction, we all know that there are international norms and standards and instruments of which South Africa has agreed to, and one of the World Health Organization states that inmates must have the same access to healthcare services as what the public receives. And by me being incarcerated does not mean that a person's right to healthcare services, nutrition, clean and safe environment must be compromised, because our constitution also describes what are the basic rights that a person is entitled to. And offenders represent what is currently happening in our communities. Whatever social and health problems are occurring in the communities are also found in our correctional services. In terms of the Correctional Services Act, the department provides primary health care services, and we refer for secondary and tertiary health care services to the Department of Health. And healthcare delivery is guided by the prescripts of the Department of Health in order to contribute to the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. And correctional services is comprised of six regions. Free State and Northern Cape have been merged to form one region. Limpopo, Mpumalanga Northwest is also one region. Western Cape, Gauteng, KZN, and Eastern Cape. We have 48 management areas. We can link this to the districts in the Department of Health, and we also have around 241 correctional centers. The department has at least one primary health care facility per correctional center, and there's also beds which range from 5 to 120 per management area. And these beds, these facilities where there are beds, we don't classify them as hospitals, because they don't meet the requirement of the definition of a hospital. They just want inpatient facilities or sick beds, which are utilized to accommodate patients who are ill or recovering from post-operative procedures with and cannot be accommodated in the general service. As the CDC has mentioned, Chair, the department employs professional nurses, pharmacists, medical practitioners, psychologists, social workers, and spiritual care workers. At the end of May, and March 2013, we had 153,000 offenders. The reason for using these totals, I'm going to use them in the next coming slides. The CDC has said us what was the total. Oh, Chief Deputy Commissioner, not sent up on this. Apologies, ma'am. For this presentation, I'll send you to small bed. I hope you won't charge me for. And in terms of the programs and services that the department renders, we provide primary health care services on a 24-hour basis, and the programs include preventive and promotive health services, curative services for acute minor ailments, injuries, communicable and non-communicable diseases, pharmaceutical services, mental health care. The department also facilitates access to supplementary health care, laboratory fees, radiography, speech, ENT, occupational therapy, etc. And referral is also done within the correctional environment. In those areas where there's no sick bay, inmates will be referred to another management area. And secondly, referred to local, district or provincial hospitals, and in some instances, when public health facilities indicate that they don't have capacity to provide the required service, inmates will be referred to private health care providers. And those are the top nine diseases that are prevalent in no particular order: sexually transmitted infections, TB, HIV, skin disorder, musculoskeletal, chronic conditions, dental, gastrointestinal, and mental illnesses. And in terms of HIV and TB management, these are relevant in terms of the National Strategic Plan of Government 2012 to 2015, as well as the Department's TB guidelines. These guidelines were developed with the assistance of the Department of Health, partners, NGOs, and the Minister of Health launched them on the 24th of June on World TB Day. And the guidelines describe the following. In terms of prevention for HIV, offenders are offered HIV counseling, testing, and once positive, they are linked for treatment, to treatment. And health education sessions are provided on an individual basis for two groups of offenders. Inmates are screened. HIV positive inmates are also screened for TB. And these inmates are provided with a preventive prophylaxis, preventive therapy to prevent the likelihood of developing opportunistic infection. We also distribute condoms, and we also ensure access to voluntary male medical circumcision. In terms of condom distribution, we distributed around 39,000 condoms for females and 1.5 million for males. And in terms of provision of post-exposure prophylaxis, for the financial year 2012, there were 110 cases that were reported on sexual assault, and 77 of those were provided with PEP in accordance with the guidelines. And the reason that we didn't provide only 110 of them is that once an offender reports that he's been sexually assaulted, they will be counseled and tested for HIV. If they are negative, they will be provided with post-exposure prophylaxis, because it is not provided to a person who is already HIV positive. And PEP is accessed internally in the department, and in some instances, these offenders are referred to the external crisis centers. In terms of male medical circumcision, we set our target for the previous financial year to 1,000, and 2,900 males were circumcised. And we refer pregnant women who are HIV positive for prevention of mother-to-child transmission, and the Department of Health now adopted a new strategy, no more prevention, but eradication of mother-to-child transmission. In terms of care, the department provides palliative care with the support of partners. It was piloted in KwaZulu-Natal, in Durban and Pietermaritzburg, and is now rolled out to two management areas in the region, especially to those terminally ill inmates who do not qualify for medical parole or who do not have families who are accepting or willing to take them back. And the department also has facilitated the establishment of support groups. In terms of treatment, we ensure access to antiretroviral therapy internally and through referrals. And we have just started with a new policy to provide the three dose combination as prescribed by the National Department of Health. And in this slide, this is the performance in terms of HIV. In terms of testing, the department, we set a target of 3.7 per quarter, because testing is not mandatory. And for the first quarter, second quarter, 11%, 17% quarter 3, and 14% quarter 4 in terms of testing. And in terms of those who are eligible for treatment, the target was 51%, and first quarter we managed to see 49%, 62% in the second quarter, 69%, and 72% in the fourth quarter on treatment. And in terms of those with a CD4 count of below 350 were on ARVs, the target was 93% and the average for the year was 96%. And in terms of TB management, all inmates are screened on admission for TB. Within 24 hours, we also conduct a comprehensive health assessment to ensure that those who are suffering from any medical condition are put on treatment. A lesson care plan will be developed. Recording and monitoring will be done. Continual health education will be done, especially for TB. And all positive TB patients are offered HIV counseling and testing. And HIV infected TB patients are initiated on cortisone preventive therapy unless it's contradicted depending on a patient's condition. As I've already mentioned, the guidelines were developed with the assistance by the Department of Health. And these guidelines are emphasizing that from now on, all inmates must be offered HIV counseling and testing on entry, on exit, and upon self-presentation, and also during campaigns. And we must also conduct TB screening on all inmates on entry, exit, biannually, especially for the long timers, during campaigns, and also on self-presentation. And screening must also be extended to internal and external contacts. Internal contacts refers to those inmates who are staying in the same cell as the index case, and external contacts will be the family and especially children under 5. And positive patients are isolated for 2 weeks, and we are now going to utilize the GeneXpert machine. I hope all of you are aware of the GeneXpert. We are currently having 5 GeneXpert machines, which were secured through global funding. They came to one of the partners, and the Minister of Health has donated 3 GeneXpert machines in order to improve diagnosis of TB and to put patients on treatment immediately. And the department participated in the costing of a proposal for global funding, and one of the aspects that we have costed for is the digital chest x-ray machine, which do not require radiologists. Even a nurse or a trained person can operate this machine, and they will assist the department in diagnosing, especially extra-pulmonary TB. And in terms of treatment, is provided in accordance with the National Department of Health guidelines. And in terms of drug-resistant TB, patients are referred to the external facilities of the Department of Health for treatment and management. The Department of Health has taken a decision that all MDR patients must be managed in the community. And we are in negotiating with the Department of Health that it won't be possible for now for the department to manage MDR in the correctional facilities due to the overcrowding and lack of adequate facilities to isolate MDR cases. And their treatment range from 18 to 36 months. But the department is assisting us. We have identified a number of facilities of which they will be upgraded to meet the requirements of a MDR unit. And all positive patients are done CD4 count as prescribed by the GAST guidelines and also screened for STIs. In terms of the highlights, VCS is now actively involved in all startup activities, and our minister is also a member of the Interministerial Committee on HIV. And the Department of Health is slowly integrating DCS health services into the national health system, especially TB and HIV. The Department of Health also provides leadership in terms of policy development and support from the district, especially in the management of TB. We are really offered great support by the district and sub-district and the provinces. And the Department of Health also allocates community service pharmacies to improve access to pharmaceutical services. In terms of TB performance, for the 2012-13 financial year, in terms of aspects screened, those are the totals, and the reason for the discrepancies from quarter one up to quarter four, intensified case filing was only communicated to DPS in the middle of the financial year. That's the reason the first two quarters were so low, and in the fourth quarter we managed to screen 20,518 units. And out of those amounts, those are the suspects, quarter one, 60, 64, 43, and 29. And the 29, I think it could be due to the high number of suspects screened in quarter four. And in terms of those who converted to the positive, quarter one was 30, 11, second quarter, 8% quarter three, and 8% quarter four. And they were all started on treatment. The reason for the variance in quarter two was the challenge is, as the Chief Deputy Commissioner referred to the admissions and releases, we have challenge in managing our waiting tribe, because at times our waiting tribe may be admitted to DCS, you screen, you become a suspect, you collect the symptom, you send the symptom to the lab. By the time you get the results, the awaiting trial has gone to court, and the court has sentenced him to another court for he may have been acquitted. So those are the number of cases that we are losing along the way. And in terms of a cure rate, 51, 58, 56, and 32, the reasons for the quarter 3 and 3 and 4 performance, there may be a number of reasons. Others may have been transferred to other facilities, others released, others died, others are those that may have not completed treatment or not cured, and those that may have converted to NDR or FDR status. And partnerships, we have signed several MOUs, but I just want to highlight the following. Population Council is assisting the department in strengthening post-exposure prophylaxis services in DCS for post-sexual assault and injuries. And ITEC is going to provide training to all healthcare professionals in DCS for the comprehensive management of HIV and TB, and hospice and palliative care to strengthen the department's capacity to implement palliative care. And in the previous financial year, we trained 1186 offenders as peer educators to assist in health education and establishment of support groups. Here, following are some of the challenges that the department is experiencing. Overcrowding is the highest one, which contributes, and literature shows that overcrowding contributes to the spread of communicable diseases. But the department forms part of the IJCS to discuss overcrowding in correctional centers. One of the measures, I think, is this non-custodial sentences. And I think there's continuous interaction in the justice system to consider giving people a bail, because some of them are in for minor crimes and they can't afford to pay bail. In terms of capacity, the department is unable to retain healthcare professionals. We have a high turnover of healthcare professionals, and we are continuously engaging with the partners to assist in providing healthcare staff where possible. And some partners do staff providers with staff, for example, pharmacists in other correctional centers. We use pharmacists for partners, data capturers for partners, and medical practitioners. The second challenge is there's a lack of a policy for Section 38A of the Nursing Act, which prescribes that a nurse can access, prescribe, keep, and dispense medication where there are no pharmacists and medical practitioners. But the doctor in charge of that facility must authorize a nurse to this. Unfortunately, DCF do not have full-time doctors in all facilities, but we have engaged the DG, and this matter is receiving attention. In terms of capacity, we have 870 nurses, 9 full-time medical doctors, 24 pharmacists, 6 community service pharmacists, 9 pharmacy assistants at post basis, 56 psychologists, 1427 spiritual care workers and social workers. I included the last two categories because they also provide health education on HIV, provide counseling also. And in terms of TB diagnosis, the turnaround time for sputum results, before the gene extract machine used to be 6 weeks to 2 months. But it has it is now coming down to less than 3 months. And pharmaceutical services, as I've indicated, we only have 24 pharmacists in 242 correctional centers. We have negotiated with the provinces, Department of Health, to order medication from the provincial depots, and we signed an agreement with the Western Cape and Northwest. It's been finalized, KwaZulu-Natal has been finalized, and Gauteng is being finalized. And in terms of TB-HIV collaboration, the Department of Health is assisting the department with regard to that. And poor continuity of care, poor control of diarrhea of death, treatment shock costs during incarceration due to the mobility of the inmates, and poor linkages to clinics in the community upon release and loss of follow-up. This is a challenge, but with the Department of Health, we are going to implement the guidelines which prescribe that there must be linkages, especially after care. The biggest challenge is infrastructure. The correctional facilities were built many years ago for security purposes. They do not complement healthcare delivery at all. In terms of infection control, privacy, with TB, it's the challenge. We currently, for the new prison, what can be done is to link with Department of Public Works for when new prisons are built. Health infrastructure standards must be complied with. But with the current ones, it is really a challenge. There's no ventilation, there's lack of direct sunlight, which is required for TB management, and a lot of challenges. But where possible, we are trying to implement general infection control precautionary measures. In terms of monitoring and evaluation, these facilities are not integrated into the formally into the district. Thus, this results in not being linked to the electronic TB register, which assists in evaluating the TB program performance. What kind of the department does we use manual registers, and as the slips are cleared out, we submit them to the sub-district, then the data is captured in the sub-district, and the data is sub-district, district, provincial, and national. And the TB unit with the runners, is that the unit that deals with monitoring and evaluation within the TB unit are in the process of making DCS facilities for them to be directly linked to ETRMPA.net. Meanwhile, a number of nurses have been trained, as I've indicated, we lack doctors, so there's no clinical mentor for these nurses to initiate as ARC. Health will be training our doctors to be clinical mentors, and we had a meeting with DG of Health. There may be a possibility that if there's a doctor within the district where the correctional facility is, that doctor may be required to mentor nurses who are in correctional facilities in order to improve access to us. Contact tracing, the nature of the environment, as I've referred to, it's a challenge. But by implementing the guidelines, I think this will assist. But in terms of external contact, the Minister of Health has indicated that the dog supporters or the teams that are working in the district must also be utilized to assist in tracing contact of those who are already arrested in correctional facilities. And in conclusion, correctional services must form part of the national health system, because good prison health is good public health. And partnership and cooperation between DCS and the Department of Health and all relevant stakeholders will ensure that optimum health care is provided to the inmates. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mabena, and too, with this very comprehensive presentation that we have just made to the committee. And I think that the stage committee is ready to interact with presentations by making comments, asking questions, and clarifying questions. At this stage, I will allow members of the committee to do so. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. This is a very important presentation, because at the end of the day, we are aware that efforts of people don't perform well as far as the TB cure rate is concerned. And that is why we have to, come together and deal with this issue. I would like to know, because this is a national picture, what we have just given. One could have really wanted to see the breakup and problem when you have that you can send it so that a person must be. Because we are members of parliament from different constituencies, whereby you have to do oversight, so that when you go to oversight, you must be having an information. But Chairperson, maybe can the information can be sent. And I would even want to know about the real relationship between the correctional service, health service, and the Department of Health. Do you have joint management meetings whereby you sit together, and if yes, and how often? You have talked about you have now negotiated that you get your medication directly from the depot. I want to know, because you have only now negotiated and you have made mention of the provinces which are such to be compliant. How are you getting your medication? Because at a certain stage, I could see from your presentation, you do have problem with medication. And I will, sitting here, I will really panic if you are having problem with medication, the resistance, the drug resistance, all those things that which really affect the cure rate, all those things. More especially on TB, because when a person has TB, irrespective that he's at the prison, he comes from a family. What do you do about the contact? Because what you are supposed to do the moment I'm in the prison and I'm TB, my TB smear is positive. It's not only me. You have to really look at their conduct. Can we go to the slide of TV performance? You say that number of suspects screened for TV. You give me the number of the people you have screened. And I was expecting that you should give me even the number of the people who sin in the primary health care, so that I can like reach how is your performance, because it's supposed to be 10 to, the difference is 2 to 10 percent, the norm. And now, I can't see that you are screening enough, because I don't see per quarter how many patients have you seen as an inlet. I don't know what you call, is it a clinic or whatever. I would want to see that. You have explained about the differences of the quarters, because when fortunately this one, even if it came last yesterday, one could go through it. Now, when I always say to the presenters, let your presentation talk to me, even if you are not here. You find that there are some members who are not here, but they are going to rely on your presentation. Will it explain, even if you had a good explanation at the end, to so that I understand when I'm not around? Because it was alarming for me to see the difference. The positivity is very high, especially on the first and second quarter, because the norm is 2 to 10%. And like you were at 13, you were at 11, 13% on the first quarter, 11% on the second quarter. Then it is this one there, I will see. One would want to know where you have again explained the percentage, the number of the kids near positive started treatment. You explained, but now if I was not here, I was going to ask myself, what happened to the 2%, to the 1%, because if you have done smear positive, you must treat 100%. That is a very, very crucial thing which I don't understand, is your TB cure rate. The TB cure rate is not based on the statistic above.
Yeah.
It's a year after. But now, when I'm sitting here, I look at your number of suspects. I look at the first and the second quarter, and the third and the fourth quarter. You know, when I'm at home, it seems as if you have taken that, because it's declining according to the data above. And now I know that it's not supposed to tally with the data above, because the data above is this is maybe last year's. But now the story is for 2011. Therefore, at the end of the day, I didn't know if my understanding is correct. At the end of the day, this is a very, very, very interesting thing. I'm very sorry.
No, it's all right.
Okay. You talked about on your challenges, the capacity. I would like to know, do you have the retention strategy, the recruitment strategy? And because initially when I was a nurse, the people who were leaving the Department of Health to go to you because you were paying better. Now after OSP, now they are coming back. What is this OSP? Have you considered it? Or is it a Department of Health thing? Then the lack of national policy in implementing whatever, and you talk about the licensing. You have given us the breakdown of your human resource, but one would even go further to be really wanting to know, more especially on the professional net. When you say professional net, are you talking about, because a more qualified net is a professional net. Then, and when you talk about licensing, because when you have done primary health care as a course, this diploma with long name, I never talk about assessment, treatment, and care. It allows you to prescribe and whatever, because you have. How many primary health care nurses do you have? I think that would be turn around time. Page 21. Oh, I'm confused. Maybe it's because my knowledge is accepted a little bit for 5 years. turnaround time. I think the turnaround time with me, it will be saying when you collect the specimen, then you take it to the lab. When it comes back to the lab to you so that you can commence the treatment. Now you say it's 6 weeks to 2 months. Now I start to jitter because the norm is supposed to be 48 hours. Now the difference between 48 and 6 weeks, let alone 2 weeks. Now I'm asking myself, what is happening to this person who hasn't started treatment and is with other inmates in the facility. What I want to know, do we have a dedicated person? Because who's dealing with TB? And if the answer is yes, how is the relationship with the coordinator of TB at the Department of Health? For now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jujitsuai. I'm going to say,
Thank you, Chair President. I don't have much questions to ask. My is just I want to check because I would like to thank you, the correctional people, because this is amazing. I didn't realize that you can work so hard. I think maybe you are busy with Charles or Omri. But it's incredible. Chairperson, I like to know, I'm so happy because you say in your one umbrella, you mentioned a lot of things that's happening in the correctional service. And the other issue is that maybe if they can share with us how many hospice they have in the World Correctional Service, because they are talking about 241 centers. And they cover the World Correctional Service in the country. And then we are talking about a lack of jobs. When we are doing our oversight in the hospital, we find that there are lack of nurses, doctors, and I don't know how do you manage. Maybe, like my colleague said, you are paying more. There's no shortage because you are having a lot of jobs in your country. There are kids, there are strong sources, there are those who they are there because they don't do anything. They are so soft. How do you manage to work with this lot of jobs? You have a lot of nurses, social workers, and then we are talking about those who are having TB. And if sometimes she or he will go home, are you going to check every, like when you do something, somebody who is in Parola, you are checking that person every day. Are you also listening to that patient, or you refer the patient to the next hospital or clinic? Thank you.
Hello, Opinion.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In fact, some of the questions that I wanted to ask you, the one about the turnaround and about the difference between messes in the correctional services and those who are in the Department of Health, whether there are differences in the conditions of employment, what are those differences? And the other one is about the classification and standards in the healthcare facilities in the DOC. Because I see on, I think slide number 22, you think that the biggest lies with DPW in order to comply with health infrastructure standards. I think that the standards are those of the Department of Health. So, whether are they classified in terms of the standards of the Department of Health? That is, you say they are not hospitals, then I don't know whether they are not classified as clinics, they are not classified as district health care facilities. Where are they classified? And then which standards are they supposed to meet? And then, again, in slide number 11, the target percentage of inmates tested for HIV, you put the target at 3.7%. Now, 3.7% of what? 100%. So, and then if it's 3.7, isn't that aiming a bit low? I think the target is a bit low. Because anyway, according to what you've achieved, your achievement in all the quarters is about 10%. So, if you had aimed at 20%, then you would have underachieved it. So isn't that the target to put the target too low in order to overachieve?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the reason why we thought it was important to call it was to know exactly how big is the problem and we would like to know that. That goes to say, we know that 45% of people who are HIV positive have got psychological problems. Are you able to handle that? They've got psychological problems. You name the spectrum, but they've got psychological problems. But stemming from that, we know that people who are HIV positive, most of them, they don't die because of the HIV. They die because they get psychological problems, specifically depression, and they become immunocompromised, and then you get other infections coming in. So that goes to say, what is the mortality rate if you happen to have a mortality rate? And that goes further to say, there is something that is called parole in jail. When do you decide that somebody who is HIV positive, this particular one, can go out because he's in a condition that he cannot do anything to the outside? He just needs to go home so that he could either recover, if he can recover, or he could die. When do you decide that? That tells to prognosis.
Medical parole.
How do you prognosticate people and say, this one, we can keep him in jail, this one, we can isolate him, this one needs to go home because according to the prognosis, it's too bad. You mentioned the challenge that, which is the second reason why we called you. We know keeping them, they were told that the prisons are full. Now, TB is very happy where people are close to each other. And how many people do you know that go in without TB and they come up with TB? They go into jail without TB, but they come out having TB. You mentioned condoms that you have TB. I think you have got more than 100,000 inmates, male inmates. you are giving them about 1 million condoms. If I do my arithmetic, if I do my arithmetic, it talks about 10 condoms per person. Is that enough? Is that enough for that situation that they're in? Or maybe there were other measures of preventing them, etc. That was in jail. That goes on with, for me, it's a little bit interesting, but it might be lack of knowledge on my part. The female condoms. I'm saying it could be lack of knowledge. The females are kept alone. I think the condoms that I used for, that I used outside, I used between males and females. It's heterosexual in the house. Now, if they're staying alone, the females, and you still have condoms, what does it mean? I don't want to go into detail, but I want to know. I don't have the process, but I want to understand why the female condoms, when they're staying alone. Maybe I need to be educated, I need to have them. So,
no, we are right, what's it? We also need to be educated around the area. Let me also take this opportunity to pose a few questions. You mentioned under your challenges the current infrastructure that is inadequate for you to be able to provide health services quickly. And you mentioned that you're planning to liaise with the Department of Public Works so that in future they are able to incorporate or include the expected health infrastructure. But what I would like to know, what are your plans with this current infrastructure that we are having? Because you can't just leave the situation in chance and say, well, it's inadequate, things like that. Something has to be done with this current situation that we're experiencing right now. With the current facility. What are your plans around that? And on challenges, on TB HIV collaboration, you mentioned that poor integration of TB and HIV limited implementation of ICT and CPT guidelines. Why is this situation? Why are we having this problem of poor integration? Can you just explain to us a little bit further? And maybe you can also inform us about the spiritual care workers, what their role was in it. Just to be a little better about this. DCS is actively involved in all South African National AIDS Council standard activities. Can you just elaborate at the provincial level whether you do have people sitting in provincial AIDS Council structures to us? So that if they're not, we should encourage them to do so at the community level. Do you have any children in your facilities? And if you do, are they also infected? Do you have any children infected with HIV or HIV in your facilities? That will be all for me. And you can respond.
Can I just an announcement? Because it's a Friday and it's very cold, we've got tea, but we don't want to stop for tea. We just want to continue until we finish. So people could just move out and have tea and then come back and sit. I noticed my mother and Martin, it's very good. You've got somebody brilliant here with left-handed and more brilliant than the other. So he's going to be the one who's going to answer more. Because left-handed people are more brilliant than the other. Thank you.
Okay, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Curtis, and honorable members. Maybe I need to start off by saying that about the left hand. Make a bully thing, but you look into us all. It's like a two of the turn of the side, I said.
I didn't hear. No. Okay.
I'm going to go to the 11th.
Okay. Also, I'm glad that you observed that our foreign talk is there. Essentially, getting a couple. Chair, I was just going to respond to maybe more strategically, and then I'll ask Kolma Benner to go into detail as she's the I'll call her the expert, although I'm using the other hand when I'm writing. Chair, firstly, let me just say that one is learning every day, and from the comments, I think we also learn that you know, we are used to do presentations to, let me say, the Portfolio Committee on Corrections Services, but with the comments, one is learning that, you know, there's also other angles that one needs to cover, and thank you for those comments. Let me also say, Chair, just to have a bit of understanding, the statistics and the target that we have provided, it's provided in on a national level because we are a national department, and also I know sometimes we have this challenge specifically with the Department of Health because we are divided into six regions whilst we are linked to nine provinces, and then there's an overlap of districts. We are well aware of that. But in terms of maybe just in one sentence, why do we have the combined regions? In the past, we as correctional services did not have combined regions. But at this stage, we realized that we need to teach all our regional commissioners, or I believe they refer them to provincial commissioners, on the same level. Now, you have three provinces that have just a few correctional centers. Now, in terms of HR principles, you know, you cannot have a DDG on a level, and then on the lesser responsibility, you have a director. Then in terms of deliberations, it becomes a challenge that you don't have the things on the same level at the same level in the regions for their jurisdiction. Now, this is the current way that correctional services is running. One cannot say it will be forever like that. In short, the background of that is just to cut the cake equally. So in terms of the request to provide provincial information, that is possible, and we would like to provide that information. Hence, it will be on six regions which take care of those that we have indicated. That is the unfortunate part, because we don't have on the nine provinces that we have within the six regions, which we can gladly provide via our minister's office to the standing committee. So in terms of the first and second quarter, I also just want to mention that honorable members will recall that on the 7th of April last year, the honorable president announced a special remission of sentence to offenders. And from April up until the end of September, the impact of that special release was almost just below 20,000 offenders that were released from inside. So that means the 152 that we have as yesterday were then down to 120 something. So obviously that had also influenced the numbers, as well as I think the question was also that it seems that the targets are low, and you know, maybe they are pitched low because just overachieved. I can clearly state here that co-chair and all my members that was never the intention. The targets are based obviously on the previous year's performance, and you carry them over in your annual performance plan. So it's not just manipulated targets. It's targets that is based on something. And I don't know how is the involvement of the honourable members, but in terms of correction services, we present the annual performance plan to the portfolio committee, and they also want to make sure that what is being put as target is achievable, as well as whether there's interdependency to other departments or, you know, external bodies, because as we indicated as correctional services, the fact that we have so many areas of responsibility in terms of different departments that is small into correctional services, that, you know, we cannot just ignore that. Chair, also, you know, I can continue by saying that, you know, we have, if we're talking about OSDs, we don't have only OSD for healthcare, we have OSD for artisans, another department dealing with that, OSD for teachers, another one. You know, we have chaplains, we have people in agriculture, so all of those have their own OSDs, but maybe Maria will just maybe focus on the issue of the recruitment strategy for healthcare services. So we are dealing with really many OSDs, within our department, and within our department, Chair, we have people appointed in terms of the Public Service Act and in terms of the Correctional Services Act. And those appointed in terms of the Correctional Services Act is a further distinction between center-based, those people who are working directly with offenders, and what we call non-center-based. Those people are working in offices and rendering services not directly linked to offenders. So just to have that understanding of that, that distinction there. Chair, and generally there was also a question whether we continue with medical services to offender once they are placed on parole. As and when an offender leaves correctional center, medical care will stop there with regard to the Department of Correctional Services. And when they are on parole, it will be for their own pocket, or they need to go to the Department of Health. Because normally what we receive this on many occasions, especially when we release people on medical parole, obviously the medical bills for those specific people are sometimes very high, but that is one of the areas that some people who qualify to be released have this challenge that family cannot take care of them, or they don't have support systems, or they then need to knock at the door of the Department of Health. But we will maybe just discuss the parole, the medical parole board a little bit later. Jay, let me go to the issue of the fact, I think there was a question on we will make sure that we don't miss them, but we'll come back to some of them, Jay. The issue also, Jay, your question of the psychologist, you know, whether we have enough. Jay, we will never, I believe, have enough psychologists, because currently we have, as indicated in the slide, 66 psychologists. This is an area where we really have a need, as in the public sector, as well as in private sector, where we don't have enough, and especially where we are dealing with the release of offenders. Those who are serving longer sentences, you need psychological reports for that. You know, in terms of offenders serving 10 years and more, Chair, and co-chair, it's almost, in a rough figure, 54,000. And so I'm saying this, that the committee have understanding that although there is this need for health care, the stretching of the psychologist also to provide reports on those for release is a matter that, you know, we reinstate the people, and I think the comments were accurate by saying that, you know, we have this vast number of areas of responsibilities that we need to cover. So here we don't have enough psychologists, we have differences, we have a strategy, but I can share that we have, in the recent past, you have interviews, you appoint a person, before they assume their duties, there's a bigger offer, because then they have a letter from the department, and then they can negotiate. So that is one of the areas that we are really struggling as a department, and we are using those that we have, and there's also community psychologists. And I think the committee will also know that there's specific standards. You cannot just say a person completed now his degree, he can now start with a job. He needs to be at least completed his honours before they are allowed to have this one-to-one with offenders. On your offenders also in private. Jay, in terms of the medical parole, it's a very interesting question that you ask, you know, when do you find that balance, can this person go out on parole? Jay, the new parole, medical parole board was established in last year, February. It started to function in April, and just on rough figures, they consist of 11 medical practitioners, not involved in the Department of Correctional Services. They are all outside the Department of Correctional Services. They are chaired by Dr. Ramatitele, and his vice chair is Dr. Kutsia. And we have tried, when we appointed them, to represent all 9 provinces. But unfortunately, we did not found interested doctors on all provinces, but we have at least 11 that are taking care of country of all provinces. Why? Because as and when, let me just take a step backwards, according to the ACM regulations, that any offender or the family of offender can apply for legal parole. As and when they believe that they qualify in terms of the conditions stated in the regulations, you know, there's a list, I think, of 21 different illnesses that they need to comply with, and also criteria. So it can be by them, it can be the medical doctors, it can be by our department, also initiated by our professional nurses or doctors. Safe to say, Chair, that in terms of the last year, they actually started to sit in June last year, just to round up things, they have seen roughly 150 applications. And from those applications, it gives you around 23% who were in fact recommended by them. Making it clear that, you know, you find people who are maybe taking chances. Some of them think that, you know, it's an easy way out. But I think we are glad to have the legal parole because you have now consistency. You don't depend on individual doctors, but you have this board that as and when they receive applications, they will assign among themselves also to go and do assessment by themselves so that they can present to the board their observations plus what was submitted by other doctors. And given that we have then received positive recommendations for roughly 35 in the first year, just to give an indication that due to the board, it's about, I think, about 10-20% lesser comparing to previous years before the institution of this board. So, but I think it was really a step in the right direction because I think the standing committee will also be aware of all different type of perceptions in the public about medical parole, and I think we succeeded now to have a system that prevent people that don't qualify and, you know, where there's not a board that really consider and recommend. And let me say, Chair, in terms of the recommendations of the medical parole board, if they recommend that the person needs to be released, they're not taking a decision. The decisions, they are just doing a recommendation, and that recommendation will go to the parole board or in terms of LIFES to our minister. And they have a measurement to also look at, you know, type of crime, whether the situation of the individual was known to the sentencing judge or magistrate. They are also looking at, and they need to be convinced that they can, there will be care and support for the offender. So that's that background here. Chair, in terms of our facilities, as one of the challenges, you know, we have some of our institutions are very, very old. Let me start with the oldest of those facilities. Some of them are so old that they are declared museums. Then you cannot really change and, you know, take out some walls. Now, those we are really stuck in. Some of them are at your smaller places, and it is not easy to change the infrastructure. I'm just saying this, Chair, that we know that we are dealing also with this challenge. Chair, in terms of close by is Portsmouth. Portsmouth is almost some of the places 50 years and older. There are newer places, but the admission center where most of the offenders are kept, all the admissions, is a structure where the hospital is, you know, within, and there are even, you know, four or five floors. So to change the infrastructure there is a real challenge, and we are relying again here on Public Works because they are, as the Honourable Committee will know, that they are the government department that is in that. So it is very difficult, although I need to mention that there are a number of old correctional facilities which we have renewed. In the Western Cape, I can mention Sierst, which is just outside Worcester, where the old place has been replaced by a new center that will be free operated in the few years to come. It was possible to renew Van Rensdorp. Now, Van Rensdorp was also declared a museum, and it was possible, Chair, to change the infrastructure to keep the old as is, but, you know, it was possible to build a new center there. And, Chair, let me also say that we do have correctional centers accommodating 60 to 200 offenders, which is very cost-effective. Not cost-effective, it's very costly, because, you know, you still have one day, you still have this, you still have that. And also in the rationalization process that we are also part of our infrastructure development and planning, is that we will not have in the years to come any correctional center with a lock up total less than a round figure of 500. Because if you have that number, it makes it possible, you know, not to have a nurse for 5 or 10 offenders, but to have better results. That's why the smaller ones are very costly, and it's not possible to maintain them. And Chair and Co-Chair and Honourable Members, you know that if we will need to consider to close some of them, it will be also against the President who is saying that we need to ensure that there's rural development and. So it is almost a catch-22, but we try to do what we can. Chair, I can also say that we do have, unfortunately not the plan here, we do have a 5-year building program that is taking care of some of the comments shared by the Honourable Members. And that is obviously, unfortunately, outside the two of us here in this region, but we are aware, we are serving of those committees that we do have those plans. And again, Chair, you would know, and the Honourable Members, that if you need to compete, whether you need a hospital, a school, or a correctional centre, you know, it is always a challenge. It's not an excuse, I think it's a reality. And all of us are aware of that. And as mentioned, the two chair, also at the outside booster, there's a correctional centre called Bramfleet, where there's also a new correctional centre that is taking care of the ideal place for the hospital, you know, and. So it will be a long process, but I think what is important is whether the vision and the strategy of the department, whether they're satisfied with the situation. No, we are not. And the minister is taking the lead that we need to change, you know, the places that were built in the apartheid years for a specific reason. We are now a different focus where we are putting rehabilitation as part of the core, and I don't think I need to say more on that. Then the question of spiritual care works. We regard that as a real pillar in our rehabilitation of offenders, because every person do have a faith. It might be even a faith not to have faith, but everybody do have belief in something. Now again here, you know, we have Christians, we have Muslims, we have Hindus, we have all faiths work again. So all the duplications are again there. And here we have permanent chaplains at our bigger places, but then we are really relying on communities. That's why I think you have seen the numbers there, 1,427. The most of them are not paid by the department. They are doing those services. We normally just assist those people who have almost, you know, the basic, just the traveling fee, where we are just almost giving a stipend for gender to come. So we have church services of thousands and thousands, because we have different faiths, because we need also to take care that if you belong to this church group, that this other pastor is not taking those people. And, you know, it's really a part of the challenges, but it's not a problem for us, because some faiths are very small, but what we are saying, if there's one person for a specific faith, we allow a person from that church group to come and assist and provide that support. And Chair, and I think as Ms. Mabena was saying, that they are playing a very important role in as and where there's counselling that need to be provided. Because normally there's not a clear understanding, because there's programs presented by our officials where they are presenting certain correctional programs to address offending behaviour. There's also psychologists who's doing almost the same, social workers from a different angle the same, as well as special care. Now it seems like a duplication, but the other day we said to our portfolio committee, if an offender is being sexually abused, do you accept that? Because, you know, most of them are males, and we know males are thinking, you know, we are really bold and strong. Would you go to the official who is doing the security and the guard duty to say, listen, I was raped yesterday? Or will that person choose a softer option, maybe to the nurse, to the spiritual worker, or to the social worker, or to the psychologist? So, you know, one needs also to cater for that, because I don't think it's easy, and it will never be easy, just to step out and say, you know, I was raped, because we know what are all the surrounding issues of that. But so we need the special workers, we need the Japanese, you know, to also provide that solid support to our offenders. Because, Chair, in terms of, and my apology to go back every time, but just so you understand that in terms of the rehabilitation of this offender, he can, if, when a person is not healthy, how do you rehabilitate that person? So it is a really a combination of a lot of things that we are trying to put together. And on a lighter note, yesterday we had this lot of media interest in the Watergrip 2 who was assigned to come back. And then people asking about rehabilitation. And Chair, you know, our department is in a situation that, for example, we are providing drug and alcohol programs. The same programs will be provided outside. If a person is outside and he relapses, you will never hear any person or media who will blame the program. They will blame the person to say it's a relapse. If we as a department provide the same program, and the person relapsed, they are not saying relapse, they are saying that the program is not working. Then we blame the department instead of the individual. But that is just on a lighter note, Chair. Chair, in terms of the question also, what makes it also more difficult in terms of who's behind bars. We have so many vulnerable groups. Vulnerable groups can be the people above 60. Because as we are sitting here, we have more than 1,000 people above 60, even about 170 plus. So, and you will be amazed at the type of cancer that is. But let's leave that there, Chair. In terms of the younger people, Chair, we are referring to children, but then let me start with babies. We have on any given day in the country about 100 babies. That means 0 to 2 years with their mothers behind bars. What in the definition of rational services, child or children, are those younger than 18 and older than 40. I don't have the exact number. We do have a couple of hundred unsentenced and a couple of hundred sentenced in that age category. Then 18 to 21, we regard them as juveniles. And again, we need to separate. Children cannot be with juveniles because of all the challenges that we are discussing also today. Because they are vulnerable. You cannot have a 15-year-old in the same room as a 19-year-old. As you cannot have an 18 or a 19-year-old with a 24, 25 or 30-year-old. So that is a further a category that we are keeping separate. Chair, in terms of the definition of, you know, in the public, youth are regarded up until age of 35. Now, on our side, we don't have the same definition. Our definition for youth programs is up until the age of 25. I'm just giving this ring that you can see the challenges in terms of numbers. The question of the number of children that are involved or that, you know, in terms of the statistics, Chair, we don't keep that separate. We realized also that the Department of Women and Children, they also requested certain categories. We are in a situation currently where we are trying to change our reporting requirements to our regions and provinces because of the needs. Because, you know, for correctional services, there was not a need to have all the different categories of offender therapy. But just to give that background that we don't have the information of children that I think the co-chair did. So let me pause there and ask Maria, then I'll leave the field of condoms for them to educate. Chair, thank you very much for now.
Thank you, Chair and members. In terms of the provincial breakdowns that we will make them, I don't know that they will continue to be taken very long, but in the future, to share, we will make them available. And in terms of the joint management meetings, the Department of Health at National is involved in DCS at national, provincial, district, and sub-district level in terms of TB and HIV only. We are involved and we attend. There are the very quarterly PDH meetings that we have to attend. And in terms of their monthly meetings, there are weekly meetings that the directory is expected to attend at national. For example, next week, Wednesday, there is one that health is coming to DCS. And in the provinces, there's still a challenge. Some provinces do involve DCS, but some provinces say, yeah, there's a discrepancy. I remember many years ago, we were called to present to the meeting of the head of health, where we made a recommendation that can they incorporate DCS into all the functions of health, because we run primary health care clinics across the road as a primary health care clinic. And I'm just going to use the issue of turnaround time as an example. NHLS, National Health Laboratory Services, courier services between health and them. So they will collect 3 times in the clinic, but not collect 3 times in DCS. And then DCS will have to use a van or a car to transport the 3 times. When the results come, the courier services will deliver in the clinic, but DCS will have to phone if you have a phone and ask them to check, because you need to be management. The results must be there for you to update the register and all those things. So there's been some discrepancies among the provinces in incorporating DDS into the health system. And there was a time when we recommended, please, from the ministers of health science, request the MECs of health, everybody involved in health to formally or to formalize this incorporation, because currently there's 2 parallel health systems, of which one is a installment in German care. Yes, if I use a scenario, it's these 2 health systems, the other one is not a bulldog, or I put it this one is a, and it's not really helping at all at all. At all. And the MOU of medicines, that's another challenge. The Department of Health decided last year that they are going to take over the medicine contract from Treasury. They are running the antibiotics contract, contraceptives, TB, and now they are managing them. Mm-hmm. Now, correctional services, according to Treasury, correctional services and SHEMS cannot arrange their own contract, because we only require, I think, 0.8% of medicines, and we are not a health expert department. How are we going to evaluate them? The Department of Health advised that we negotiate with the provinces to order from the depots. Western Cape, number one, they agreed. KZN, they agreed. They took long to finalize. North Wales, they said they have their own problems. Mpumalanga said, no, they can't. We must arrange our own.
When was that?
We started in 2009.
No, I think it was after the MSC, maybe short. No, continue.
Yes. The challenge is, as now we move into the fixed dose combination, we have to order from the depots. And when there's not a risk level agreement, where do you order? Now what we do, we wrote to the DG of Health and said, while the provinces are still thinking of permitting us to order from the depots, can't we order directly from the suppliers, the one they are contracted with? And the DG has agreed. So we are now ordering directly from the suppliers, where we have pharmacists. But when we don't have pharmacists, Limpopo, there's a setback. Limpopo orders medicine from Pretoria, where there's a pharmacist. Because we can use the retail pharmacies for one panel, they charge us 28 grams instead of 8 cents. And instead of, you know, those challenges, and it's government police, we can use private sector. But we are on continuous following up with the provinces. And in terms of the contacts, with the contact to DCS, we ask them, because we don't have a question. Like if one patient is diagnosed from mid-D, then we ask those questions. The challenge is when, you know, the high turnover of feathers. offenders are also transferred from one unit to the other from due to smuggling and other things, or from one prison to the other. There is continuous screening. The challenge is the capacity. We had discussions where we would like to recommend to train custodial officers, because that screening questionnaire, just simple questions, don't invade a person's privacy. Are you posting lots of weight, sweating, and then the custodial officials, they can take that, or some of the care educators, and then they give it to the nurses, and then the nurses will take some time and continue. And in terms of the external contact, what the Minister of Health requested DCS to do, immediately when we diagnose a person with TB, we must immediately inform the clinic where the offender is coming from. He will tell the truth that I'm Marima Bena, I'm coming from Naba. Because sometimes he says, I'm coming from plot number 23. When you go to plot number 23, there's no plot, it's only trees or it's a dumping site. And in some instances, the biggest challenge is the use of in TB management, alias names. Today is Moses Kosara, tomorrow is Peter Masango. When the return results come back, you'll go to the faction and call, Marima Mabena, the return is no Marima Mabena. And the time she says that, I'm not Marima Mabena, she says, I'm so Kosara. So those are some of the challenges. And I think I've heard government is going to introduce this biometric.
Yes.
I think that should also be looked at. And it's not only DCS, I think the Department of Health is also experiencing some of the challenges, because a person will go from clinic to clinic to get ARV. Yeah. And primary health care steps in future we will include them. We do collect them, but I didn't include them in the data. We do screening on admission and also on contact with health care, like provider initiated screening and do that. And in terms of the footnotes, that is the comment is noted. I was trying to look for the footnotes. I remember we put them in, it's not an excuse, but from changing the presentation, I think something just happened. But we didn't specifically this one. I just thought I'll talk to them by out of the head. But in future, we'll just put in some footnotes. And in terms of the TB cure rate, this cure rate, the last drop, it's not for this year, it's for the previous years. I apologize, I didn't mention that, because TB treatment is either 6 months, 18 or 36, and those who convert at 3 months treatment will be for more with a month, but in future we'll improve the treatment. And in terms of categories of nurses, we have those 800 something professional nurses. Out of them, yes, 800, out of them, we only have 137 primary health care nurses. They come to DPL, they get 3 bursaries or infancy study, when they qualify, they go to health. They come train, they go to health. And in terms of the OSD, primary health care is a specialty, the salary level is high. So they come, they qualify, they go to a higher salary, they go, they negotiate with the health, and they it's like a sausage machine. That's another challenge, because for a nurse to initiate demand, you must be qualified in primary health care. In some instances, you have to be material dispensing like that. If you have out of 870 minus 130, yeah, they don't have, they can't initiate NIMA. So the implication is you will have more backlogs or patients to be initiated on ART. And if you have to use Section 58 or 56 of the new Act of the regulations that have not been finalized, I ask the Department of Health, can't this private professional doctor that we are using be allowed to issue protocols? I mean that unauthorized nurses should be there. They say legally it's not allowed. So those are some of the challenges. Yes. Because that's my personal opinion. Some of the laws obstacles in delivering services, because this person is a doctor, if he's trying to mentor, why can't he use him? Irrespective of is a private doctor or a doctor employed by the state, he remains a medical practitioner. In terms of turnaround time,
yes,
48 hours. It means 80% of the speed times must be received within 48 hours. But with DCS, the speed time goes with a van or a car to the lab, and then lab has to call, they will say yes, the patient is TB. So the results must be received before, but you initiate treatment because you can't wait for 6 weeks. And then one day the lab has to drive to the lab to collect, on the lab we say, we send this one, we accuse this one. So with the costing of the GeneXpect machine, we also costed for the SMS print, where the results will be printed immediately, and we costed 4042, while the correctional center. If I can use, we have a correctional center in Northern Cape, Springbok. They say health is an offender's business to and some we have to literally drive to the system to look at them and go back. But if they have gene expert machines, I think men, it will really assist. And we do have dedicated TB focal persons. In some districts, they are linked to the TB coordinator. The TB coordinator is a district manager, this is for some facilities. But in some facilities, they do not. If this can be analyzed, then healthcare needs to be integrated into the decision system. In some provinces, it's working fine. Like in the Eastern Cape, the TB manager, the provincial TB manager, knows everything what the minimum correctional services is. But in some other provinces, yes. Yes, and in one meeting of making a presentation, they were asking me why is the cure rate of quarter rate high in that and that. I said we do submit. There may be problems with record keeping. But some provinces, I am fortunate to be a member of the TB review team. We went to one province and one correctional center, and the TB manager was there when she was, because it was a review. There were certain conditions, people asked the correctional staff, do you know this lady? The official said, no, the first time that we see her. And once, during the break, she said, I'll give you correctional services weekly, I'll check the records. All the registers were new, all of them were new. And at times, is this thing of saying prisoners belong to correctional services? And I always tell them they don't belong to correctional services because it's their children, their husbands, wives, and cousins, and everybody. So we really need to integrate the two systems. And the question of Mayor Honorable is the hospitals. We do not establish them in correctional centers, but we have the palliative care program, which is working in collaboration with the hospitals outside. It's like the highway hospitals in Devon, Pietermaritzburg, works with the correctional services, so they are supporting us. Currently, fully established palliative care programs between Devon and Pietermaritzburg. But in all the other regions, we identify two management areas where there are beds, more than 50 beds. So the palliative care program must be provided in them because we need to feed the patients, but issues of pain management, visitations by families, pastors, etc., etc. And it's true there are, we do lack nurses and there is unemployment outside. As I say, apart from this high turnover of nurses, I think budgetary cuts also contribute to issues of vacant posts. Because I know there are a few posts that have been vacant for quite some time, and due to budgetary and competition among the different programs results in prioritizing. But I think the department is really trying to ensure that as soon as nurses posts become vacant, we fill those posts. And the third question was, do we check people when they go home? We do check them. The policy is all people must be screened on release and on transfer. They act and that is written, they are even given medication so that whilst waiting to go for the next appointment, they must continue on treatment. We really give them a month supply of pain medication, hypertension, mental health, etc. And the other questions were, are there differences on conditions of employment? Can I continue this for the
moment?
There are no different major differences in conditions of employment of nurses, except for the salaries are the same, except for medical aid leave are the same, except for, I think, the working environment. Like, I once went to Johannesburg. In one morning, there were 7,000 females who were going to court, and the policy day, they must all be screened. And before they go to court, there were two nurses, one pregnant. So if I was a nurse, I think I would also be scared. I think the challenge is the environment in which they find themselves in. And in terms of classification of health facilities, we have clinics and inpatient facilities. Not hospitals, because a hospital is described in terms of the regulation. So it's just a room with a number of beds. There's a dispensary. There's also treatment room, resuscitation room, dental room, physio room, a seat based off. And we admit like one day patient. A patient may go for a hemorrhoid. When he or she comes back, she's admitted into that. But not patients on drills and all those construction. And in terms of this slide, the infrastructure standards that I was referring to, when prisons are designed, previously my experience was when in case there must be the hospital, the health facility must be like on the periphery where there will be cross ventilation and there must be positive suction and the passages must not be closed. Or when you indicate those public works would say it would be costly for the state. So they would want something which is a four-walled room with windows that are high, and in terms of health it doesn't work. You need to have windows which are low and where they open, not others like this, because in terms of the issue of cross ventilation and issues of access to sunlight, because patients with TB most need vitamin D, issues of infection control. When you find that the visitation area, waiting area is this side, the windows are this side, so when the wind blows that way, all the germs get blown to the people on the waiting area. We went to select of the project that Public Works is involved in. Apparently they are designing new health infrastructure standards with consultants from the Department of Health, and fortunately they included correctional services in that process. The issue of the target is 14%. It was 14% for the year. We utilized the baseline for the previous year. The previous year's target was 25%. And we realized that based on the resources that we had, we didn't achieve 25%. So the target was lower to 15%. And the issue of psychologists, I think the CDC has responded to that, and we are assisted mostly by concept. I think in that presentation we also include the mortality. Yes, the mortality rate. I didn't bring the data with me. And the condoms that we distribute, I think they're sufficient because they're wasted. The offenders fill them in with water, they hang them on the windows. Yes, they agree. We distribute condoms, and on a monthly basis we count how many, if we distributed 1,000, we count how many have been taken. Yes, we make them available. In terms of female condoms, they do utilize.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. How?
How do you know?
They do, because we also treat this female offender for sexually transmitted infections rather than sex. They use soap, they dissolve soap, and they stuff them up with soap and they use them as dildos or whatever it can be used to. Yes, yes. And there's also some practices that they are doing which... But he continues to have the patient and counsel them because it puts their lives at risk, really.
We'll save that for another presentation.
What is being done in terms of the current infrastructure? You know, in some facilities, like in Portsmouth, they've been very innovative. The TB unit is upstairs. They've moved the TB ward up. So the access to sunlight, the fresh air flowing, and the bacteria are doesn't have that access to the years. Where possible, the prisons are trying, and in some correctional facilities, when there's one door on a passage, they put a fan on the other side so that the air can be blown towards where the door is, where possible, but in most instances, it's really a challenge. In terms of TB, HIV, especially IPT and CDT, correctional services has 9 full-time doctors, the rest. No, Gauteng and Western Cape, we have service level agreements. We utilize the Department of Health doctors. We don't have a problem with IPT and CPT. In other provinces, we utilize sessional doctors. Most of these doctors are reluctant to prescribe IPT. They say it causes resistance, it causes that and that and that. But we continuously emphasize and sensitize them that it's government policy. There's only one research that was done which said IH causes a drug sensitivity, and Department of Health did not agree with that. So we do continuously motivate the doctors to provide the required treatment. In terms of participation in SANAC, not all provinces engage correctional services in the SANAC structure. At national, we are involved, and very few provinces, correctional services is engaged, but in some it's not really a thing. Thank you, Chair Coach. I don't think I've missed.
Chair, maybe I was hoping that Ms. Morena will say to us that the female condom is ready to make them aware and to expose them and ask them that it is, and that it is at that educational knowledge also of those comments. And Chair, I'd like to note that, you know, the OSH Act prescribed that voters need to have this statement, and but we convince them that we cannot have that in our correctional service because it will be used very often. So you cannot always comply every day. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your detailed responses. My honourable colleagues, I'm sure will agree with me that we have sufficient questions for today in this presentation. That means you won't have any second round of questions, unless there are questions that they are not responded to, if you picked up anything. But I think they were, I believe so. And at this stage, I will allow my colleague there to have a closing. I know he only has a good chance to have a closing. Thank you very much. Yes.
Can
I
just ask a question?
Thank you very much. correctional services, I think we at least have got an idea of what's going on and identified, but I think there's some challenges that probably we need to look into. Maybe when we call the Department of Health, we'll have to try and see how this could be sort of sorted out. Because our worry and why we're doing an oversight is to make sure that South Africa is free of HIV and AIDS, is free of TB. And unfortunately, those two conditions, they're sort of related, and not only related, South Africa seems to be one of the countries that has got the serious burden. And it so happened that correctional services is one area where it's a place where there's a high prevalence, for actually both of them, for obvious reasons. So that's why we're going to keep a watch on you. But we seem to be content with your answers and your suggestions. And some other areas that are of a challenge is that probably we need to find laws that are going to make it easy for you to do your work. And maybe these are some of the things that we're going to be discussing with the department. So thank you very much. But we have noted that it's not only the left hand that people have not noted the passion from Maria. She's got a lot of passion about doing this.
Because she's a woman.
I'm not sure about that, but even the knowledge that is from the left handed commissioner, you can see that they know what they are doing. But we're hoping that we'll never get there, especially at this old age, we'll remain outside. But if we get there, we know we've got help of the people that happen. Thank you very much. Remember, thank you very much on a Friday, on a cold Friday. Secretary, thank you very much for preparing this meeting and contact us with the panel there. We see we've got even media here because of the media. But you have learned something, you have learned that, you know, I thought I was going to gossip about the commissioner, but I found out that you know a lot of language. Now I can't I remember one time I was in a corner Saturday in a queue at the bank. Everybody wanted to get to the bank before 11 o'clock because they closed. Now I was towards the end and there was somebody behind me. And then one white man came in, was going to be behind the and then this, somebody next to me comes in. What one moment? And before we started laughing, he answered, he said, "That's him that I have." Just about, he was so embarrassed, he left the bank. So,
Professor in London, he was gossiping about the drive, only to find that the driving is from Matipi.
No, thank you very much, everybody. Have a well-made for you. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Thanks, Marco.